The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Dana Larson is a political activist, business owner, and drug policy reform movement leader located in Vancouver, BC. Dana's mushroom dispensary in Vancouver's downtown east side was raided by a Vancouver police on October 17th. Learn more. I'm joined via Zoom by Dana Larson. Dana, first, you have my sympathies. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, it's no fun going through this kind of thing, but it's all part of the process. And, you know, it's happened before. It'll probably happen again. And we just do our best to carry on the good work that we're doing.
You're a brave man, my friend. So what happened?
Well, I mean, we run the only shop in the world where adults can come in and purchase not only a wide variety of psilocybe mushrooms, but also other psychedelics like LSD and DMT and 2CB and beneficial herbs like kratom and coca leaf when we can get it in. And we've been raided once before, just about a year ago. That raid was, we had three locations at that time, and that raid was in all three of our locations. And for that event, I actually spent several hours in jail, but I was ultimately released with no charges, and nobody else was detained or arrested like that. And we continued on. And now this is our second raid, almost a year later, very close. It seems that October, early November is raid season for the Vancouver police for whatever reason, maybe before they go off on their Christmas holidays or something. But I wasn't here at the time, but the officers came in and detained some of our staff, ultimately let them all go and spent several hours in here, brought a big truck in and unloaded all of our products and our money and everything else they could find in here. And you know, aside from the things that are obvious, all the mushrooms and psychedelics, they also like seized from our all of our LSD blotter art off the wall. You know, this is just blank art pieces just for display purposes. Obviously, we're not selling 1,000 hits of acid at a time in a frame on the wall. But regardless, they take a lot of other kind of nonsensical stuff, too. And it's, you know, no charges were laid on anybody again this time. But, it's, you know, aside from that, it's still financially devastating and takes a lot of time and effort. It scares all our employees, and some of them maybe want to quit or aren't sure about their future. And it stresses everybody out, including me, and costs the VPD, you know, Vancouver police probably spend over $100,000 on this kind of raid, money that could probably be better spent elsewhere. We reopen the next day, and it takes us a couple of days to fully restock, but we reopen as best we can the next day, and we carry on, you know. So it's not fun, although in other jurisdictions around the world, we probably get raided a lot more often and probably have a much better chance of criminal charges being laid and everything. And so although it's not fun or anything like that, and it's wrong and unjust, and we should get a business license and be able to operate like anybody else, at the same time, you know, we understand it's part of the process of making change, and it's part of the cost we pay for being a revolutionary retail outlet that we are. So that's my perspective on that.
You just had a federal election up there, right? In Canada, didn't you just have was the election like, is it now?
No, we just had a election in British Columbia, in the province of British Columbia. We just had, in fact, that's why when we got raided last year, it was a big media story. When I came in to reopen, we had four TV cameras here. It was a major story. I did lots of interviews. This time, it happened 2 days before our provincial election. And all the reporters I talked to were like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, I'll talk to the assignment desk. We're really busy with the election. And we basically got like one or two very small stories out of this. And, you know, if I'm going to get arrested, if we're going to be raided, at least I'd like to get a chance to be in the news and talk about it and articulate the reasons why we operate, to challenge the police and the narrative and all that kind of thing. But we got no attention out of this at all. It was a very quiet kind of process. And also because nobody went to jail, so I guess there's less of a story there. But yeah, we just had an election here, and it was very close. The Conservatives almost came into power. It looks like they're still counting some of the questionable seats, so we're not quite sure what the result is, but it looks like the left-leaning NDP is going to maintain power here. But the Conservatives here had been promising to shut down what they call drug dens, which are the supervised usage sites that we have here, and they were very opposed to decriminalization. And some of their figures, some of their MLAs have been very hostile towards me and our operation here. So, you know, we have challenges with every government. The lefty governments are still not super friendly to us either, but at least we can be in the room with some of the conversations. But these conservatives in British Columbia here, it would have been not good for us to see them reelected, or to see them get into power, I mean, and get elected.
So, what's the community response been like how folks been in the community? Have they been generally supportive? Have you been hearing from people? What's it like?
Yeah, I mean we're one of about 20 different shops in the city that sell mushrooms. We are different because we go far beyond mushrooms, and like I said, we sell a lot of other psychedelics and products as well that most other shops don't. And we also differ because I'm very vocal. I'm in the media. I put my name and my face on our website and in our store. The other stores that operate are much more anonymous about who's behind them, and they don't really go in the news. But, you know, for me, this is more than just a business. This is a mission and a way of life. And the whole point of what I'm doing is to do it openly and transparently. You know, my dream here is not for me to be a mushroom dealer or a psychedelic dealer. My dream here is to liberate the mushroom and psychedelic culture and to end the prohibition on these. And my business and my work is a tool towards that end, right? So for me, it's not about being in the shadows and trying to get away with something sneakily. For me, the goal is to be open and transparent and to use civil disobedience to defy these unjust laws and challenge the system. That being said, I don't want to get raided. I try to skirt, you know, to skirt on the edge of things. My goal is not to go to court and fight the laws. My goal is to use civil disobedience to create the world and the reality that I want to live in. But definitely getting raided and the threat of persecution and of jail time is very real. You know, and certainly there's a possibility I'll end up in jail one day for the work that I'm doing. But, you know, I'm in the right city, in the right area. Vancouver has its own police force. And although I have a lot of issues with the Vancouver police, and they're not perfect by any means, you know, when it comes to issues like cannabis and psychedelics and drug policy, they're usually more responsive to the community and to the city than like the RCMP would be, our national police force, which is much less responsive. You know, the cities that have RCMP enforcement, they're usually stricter and they don't care as much about what the mayor or the people in that city say. You know, we've had incredible community support here at all of our locations. The fellow business owners in the area all like us. We get a lot of people. The odd person comes in and isn't happy with us, but that's a small minority compared to those who live in the area who are very happy to see us here. And even those who are naysayers can't really point to any problems you've caused, because we've only been beneficial to our communities. You bring in a lot of tourists, a lot of business. When they finish buying with us, they go next door and they grab a sandwich, or they go down the street and do things there. Lots of other businesses in the area benefit. You know, we've had customers come to us from Korea, from Japan, from China, from Australia, other countries, just to come to this shop in Vancouver, just to see what we're doing here. But while they're here, they're certainly spending money on other things and being tourists in our city. And so we are, I think, a draw and a benefit. And we work extra hard because we know that there's scrutiny upon us and we want to maintain a high standard and try to be good community members. So by and large, I think we are supported by our community. And the psychedelic community in general, I think, you know, they are very grateful for what we do. And so we are absolutely unique in the world. There's many other shops that sell mushrooms and some of those things, but there's nowhere else on earth where you can walk in and get the selection of psychedelics and beneficial herbs that are prohibited that we provide.
And your psychedelics are tested. You know what they are. They are what they are. The purity, the potency is
absolutely
known. That's one
of
the important things about this.
Yeah. That's a key aspect of it. Is, you know, psychedelics are generally quite safe, right? I mean, mushrooms and LSD and DMT and these things, they're quite, usually it's the behavior of the user while on the substance. You know, if you do risky things, go swimming, go driving, obviously we discourage that. And in fact, to make a purchase from us, you got to have a membership card. You've got to sign a little thing in the back of the card that says, I'm not going to resell it. I'm going to be responsible. I'm not going to drive or swim or climb or do stupid stuff while I'm using. I'll treat it with respect. And I mean, that's just, you know, we can't enforce that, but certainly it reminds people to do this responsibly. You don't have to sign that when you go buy alcohol. There's no warning label on alcohol. You know, we also have user guides for all of our products to explain to people, this is what it is. This is how much a microdose is. This is how much a social dose is. This is how much a macrodose is. Here's what to expect. Here's how to use it safely. Here's some risks and protocols to be aware of, and some warnings and cross things. You shouldn't be, if you don't take this, if you're using other certain pharmaceutical drugs, and how to be as responsible as possible. And, you know, I'll say it's a testament. We've been open almost 5 years now. And I mean, it would not be unlikely for somebody to buy something from us and do something irresponsible. And, you know, that will come back to us. Somebody gets in a car accident and there's our box of LSD is sitting on the seat next to them. And that's never happened. Like, that's never come back to us. I'm not saying it never would. We have a lot of customers and some of them might be irresponsible people. But, you know, it's actually surprising to me in a way that after all this time and the many tens of thousands of people that we provided psychedelics to, that I'm not aware of anybody who's ever like had a serious problem because of this. Certainly no one has alerted us to that. And what I do hear a lot from our customers is how grateful they are for us being here and how the psychedelics we provided and the mushrooms we provided have changed their lives for the better and helped them deal with often very serious traumas or psychological issues or depression or anxiety or PTSD or things like that. And, or they just prefer to use mushrooms when they go camping with their friends and are sitting around the campfire instead of drinking alcohol. They prefer to take some shrooms, and that's fine too, you know, all the range. And often the line between what's medicinal and what's recreational is kind of a fuzzy boundary, just like it was with cannabis. Things that feel good can also be good medicine, and often those things can go together, right? But you know, I'm very proud of what we do here, and I hope we could continue, and I have no intention of shutting down or stopping anything because of this raid.
This is my conversation with business owner, political activist, and drug policy revolutionary Dana Larson. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. You never know what's in that bag, as my good friend Dean Becker always used to say, when it's under prohibition. And like I say, you're a conscientious operator working in this, showing people what can be done. And I just think it's, I personally think that's quite admirable. I just did.
Yeah, well, it's the same model we use with cannabis. You know, I was a very early part of the cannabis dispensary movement, the medicinal cannabis movement in Canada. You know, the first kind of open marijuana sales in Canada from storefronts were to medical users. And we had several court decisions that had kind of accepted the certain patients' right to access cannabis, but there was no legal supply at the time. And that created kind of an opening for us to operate our dispensaries. And we would win in court many, many times on these kind of issues and on medical access and on the unique work that we did. And ultimately, you know, the definition of medical kind of expanded there to encompass a lot of people. You know, some people have got a definite, a serious ailment. Others might be just using it for stress relief or relaxation. Those are medical aspects too. We were able to kind of open that definition of medical up and ultimately get cannabis legalized for all adults in Canada, right? Although there's some flaws with how legalization played out and everything, and that's still a work in progress. Certainly, you know, 60,000 Canadians are being arrested every year for cannabis possession. That's not happening anymore. And there's a generation of people growing up in a country where they can find a local shop and buy cannabis products in a very legal way and use them without fear of arrest or persecution, right? And we're going to do the same thing with psychedelics. You know, legalization might look different, but the goal here is to overgrow the government. And to not to overthrow, but to overgrow, right? And to produce, get as much, you know, with cannabis, it was about providing seeds and plants and buds and medicine and being ubiquitous and creating a normalized situation so that when the law changes, nothing really changes that much because there's already a store everywhere. It's already happening, right? And so, you know, I've always struggled to create a model to what should legalization look like. Well, there should be a user guide and a warning guide. There should be a warning label. And there should be rules around how old you are to access this stuff. And you should be encouraged to use it safely. And so we do all of those things. And, you know, if somebody thinks we can do a better job, please let us know. And we'll try to do a better job in terms of what we provide and the information we give. But I think the model we are creating is one that I hope other civilly disobedient shops will follow, right? I want there to be, I don't want to be the only guy in Vancouver doing this. I want others to imitate us and to maybe do it better than we're doing, but certainly to follow this model and this path I'm trying to create. You know, I don't want to be the monopoly and be the only guy in town doing this. When I say that we're the only shop in the world like that, I want that to change. You know, I want there to be other people who are inspired by what we're doing and who do it differently or whatever, but who do it in their own communities or in other parts of Vancouver. Hopefully not right next door to my shop, but Vancouver's a big city. There's plenty of room for people to open up around the city. And I encourage that, even though I'm kind of creating my own competition. Most businesses don't do that, but my goal is not about a business. It's about a revolution and about changing society and about changing these laws. And this kind of capitalist activism that we've stumbled across and kind of defying the laws and selling these products, which in itself is revolutionary to do that openly, and then to use the profits we make from that to further positive social change. You know, like the Get Your Drugs Tested program that we operate here. I founded that in 2019. It's at getyourdrugstested.com. We have a storefront in Vancouver. It's actually our old cannabis dispensary. We were forced out of one of our cannabis dispensaries after a long court battle and being there over 10 years. So we moved it down the street and to start over that battle over again and changed it into Get Your Drugs Tested. And we are now the world's busiest free street drug analysis center. Anybody can drop in or send us samples by mail, mainly from Canada, but we do accept samples from anywhere in the world. If they end up in our mailbox, we will send you the results by email. Or by, you know, phone call or whatever. And we have a number of, they're called FTIR spectrometers. It's a device about the size of a bread box. You put a little sample of the drug on, just a few little grains or a drop or whatever. And we can tell you pretty much what's in there. There's some limitations about, you know, how accurate it can be. But for the vast majority of cases, it provides people invaluable information about what they're going to be putting in their body and making an informed decision. And we've literally spent probably $2 million on this project since we opened in 2019. It's not cheap. These machines are quite expensive. We've got staff, training, rent, all these costs. And it's funded, you know, by our cannabis sales and by our mushroom sales. But it's something I very much believe in. We've analyzed roughly 80,000 samples now, and we're analyzing more every month than the month before. And I think it's really helpful. You know, part of it's about fentanyl and benzodiazepines and that. Part of it's just finding out if the MDMA you bought is really MDMA and not MDA or filler or something else, right? So sometimes it's a life-saving piece of information. Sometimes it's just knowing what you're taking more accurately and knowing what the potency is and what to expect. And, you know, I believe drug use is normal and natural, and that prohibition is what's unnormal and wrong, and that prohibition distorts and changes people's patterns of drug use and makes them more dangerous and more harmful, and makes all prohibition causes all the problems it claims to be solving. And that ending prohibition doesn't mean a free-for-all. It means regulation and oversight and education and people being able to make much better and informed decisions. And that, I think, will solve a lot of the problems that we blame on drugs is really the cause of prohibition.
Part of it is imagining what ending prohibition would look like, what the next step, and that is. So what is, tell me about your Coca Leaf Cafe. What is it? What would you, I mean, is it like a cafe cafe? What is it?
Yeah, it's part of the mushroom dispensary. So at this location here, and we have two locations now. We had a third spot, but that landlord sold the building to the city that we were in. And the when that sale happened, the city wouldn't close the deal unless he evicted us first. So we lost one of our spots. We still have two locations. And the one here, it's called the Coca Leaf Cafe. Although it's kind of a misnomer now because I haven't actually had any coca leaf for a few months. When we got raided last time, and I think the coca might have triggered the initial raid, right? Coca leaf, it's a very beneficial, wonderful leaf with thousands of years of use, cultural, spiritual, social, medicinal use. It's also the leaf you make cocaine out of, right? And so indigenous people and people in South America have chewed coca leaf and made coca leaf tea for thousands of years. It's kind of similar to coffee in some ways and its effects. I think it's a more pleasant, stimulating effect, but it's like something you drink a beverage and you'd feel more alert for a while afterwards. And we were the only place in the world, the Northern Hemisphere anyways, the only place in the Northern Hemisphere you could come in and buy a cup of coca tea or buy some coca leaf to chew. And I wanted to educate Canadians about the benefits of coca leaf and offer a safer alternative. You know, there's some studies showing that people who have problems maintaining their cocaine use or managing their cocaine use can switch to chewing coca leaf, and they find that much healthier and easier to manage. And it's got a similar effect, but it's much milder, and it's not in all of a big rush. It absorbs into your body more slowly, like snorting caffeine powder compared to drinking a cup of coffee. There's a reason that 99.99% of caffeine users prefer to drink coffee and energy drinks and to snort caffeine, even though it's totally legal to do so. People don't do it because they've got a much more pleasant option. And I really believe if cocaine and coca leaf were as legal as caffeine and coffee beans are, that the vast majority of cocaine users would be taking it in the form of a chew or a drink, and that snorting cocaine will become about as common as snorting caffeine is, right? So that if people want the milder option usually. So anyways, the Coca Leaf Cafe, for a few years, we were the only place providing coca leaf to chew and coca tea. But since the raid last year, I've had a hard time bringing in coca leaf. They've been cracking down on us with customs, and it's a challenge. You know, we can't grow it here. I bring it in from Peru and Colombia and South America and that. And you're kind of smuggling this stuff in, right? And so I hope to bring it back again, and we're working on it. But right now we don't. I'm actually probably going to change the name of the Coca Leaf Cafe and call it the Microdose Cafe, because we have been expanding our microdose options. And we serve what we call microdose shooters, which is sort of the idea. You can come in if you want to just have a single shot. You can have a shot of LSD or 2CB or 4-HOMET or other kind of esoteric psychedelics or mushroom concoctions. And in the cafe, we only serve doses that are like microdose or threshold doses. So a threshold dose is where you're just feeling a little bit, got a little tingle going on. Microdose is just a little less than that, where you just have a good day and you feel less stressed. But we don't serve psychedelic doses in the cafe. You can buy a take-home bottle to do a psychedelic dose on your own time. But microdosing really is the future in a lot of ways. Microdosing is to psychedelics like CBD is to cannabis. And it's the biggest area of growth with cannabis is like the less psychoactive products that have medicinal benefit without getting people super high. And I think with psychedelics, we're going to see microdosing becoming huge. And many people who have no desire to smoke cannabis or to get stoned, but they'll do CBD. And many people who have no desire to have a trip, even though it can be very beneficial to have a powerful psychedelic trip. Many people report it's the most important event of their lives sometimes, right? It's certainly an influential one. But many people will benefit just from microdosing, and you don't need that full experience to still get some very profound psychological benefits out of microdosing. So the Microdose Cafe is, we're going to kind of push the microdoses more and put the coca leaf on the back burner a little bit until I can start getting that in more regularly again, if I'm ever able to do so.
I was about to ask you plans for the future. The Microdose Cafe sounds like it's going to the present as well as future. Is there any way to sue the city for your losses? Maybe get them to force them to return some of your inventory? I mean, at least some of the artwork, for heaven's sake. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, we might be able to get some things back at some point. You know, we haven't got anything back from the last raid a year ago. Like in that raid, I mean, we're not going to get the mushrooms or the LSD back, obviously, or the cash either. But they did take actually a lot of peyote in the first raid. And peyote is completely legal in Canada. Whole peyote plants were never prohibited. They're specifically exempted from the drug schedule. I know in the U.S., they're in this gray area where Native American church members are allowed to use it, and it's a bit different. But in Canada, it's never been prohibited, peyote plants. And they took, and they're not cheap either. They took quite a substantial amount of those. And that's something maybe I'd hope to get back at some point. But it's been almost a year now, and it's an ongoing investigation, I guess, still. So, you know, we'll probably get that artwork back at some point. The artwork's not really that expensive, the blotter art, but it is kind of dumb they would take it, and all things being equal, yes, I'd like it back. I'd like the peyote back. I'd like a few other things they took that they shouldn't have taken back, you know. But yeah, it is financially very challenging, right? There's a lot of things they took a lot of value. We had a lot of new products we brought in to get the Microdose Cafe going, and we just fully stocked and all this stuff, and they took it all and everything. So, you know, but luckily we have suppliers that support us and that are willing to extend us credit and get us restocked again. And people believe what we're doing. And we're about 80% restocked right now. It's only been a few days. By Monday or Tuesday, we should be at 95% restocked and basically, you know, as good as new. A few products maybe take a little longer to get in or whatever, but we're doing our best. But I don't know if they're going to come back or when they're going to come back or what they're going to do there. We just have to continue carrying on and do our best.
And now they haven't yet laid charges on the November 2023 raid. Is that still a possibility, or what's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, our lawyer says they could lay charges anytime, and the police were in the news media in the last month or two, like about 2 months ago, saying because the city, we have a lot of issues with our business licenses as well. We got business licenses before we opened, just for general retail and stuff like that. Then the license inspector comes by and says, "You guys are selling illegal drugs. I'm taking your license away." And our other location, we actually had a hearing with city council about this. We have 10 city councilors in Vancouver, and our current city council is like 8 right-leaning hostile councilors and then 2 Green Party councilors who support us. And this hearing that they have for business licenses, they randomly pick 3 councilors for each like set of hearings that month. Normally the hearings are about like Airbnbs operating without a license and that kind of stuff. Once in a while, you get a mushroom dispensary, something interesting coming up. And we were very lucky that when our hearing came up, finally, after several months about this business license, the random draw was the 2 Greens and 1 of the right-leaning counselors. And the 2 Greens told the business license inspector to give us our license back and said that we hadn't been violating things. We were doing important work. And that was a very powerful decision. The rest of the council can't overrule it. Those 3 people speak for the whole council. And so that was really powerful. The license inspector refused to give us our license back and says, "I'm not going to. I don't care what they tell me," even though her job is to do what city council says, but regardless. But the point I bring up about that, about the police, is that when that happened, the police were like, we don't care if he's got a license or not. We still think they should press charges. We're still encouraging the Crown to press charges. But the police don't decide about charges. They gather evidence. They go to what we call in Canada the Crown, which would be like the DA or whatever, right? The Crown prosecutor. And they decide whether to lay charges or not. And although we're very flagrant what we're doing and we're very open, we are also only selling Schedule 3 drugs. We have very good lawyers. These laws are kind of weak in Canada. We could very likely do a constitutional challenge, go to the Supreme Court and overturn some of the psychedelic laws, which they don't really want to have to deal with. And so I think those decisions, those factors go into their decision not to lay charges yet. But they still could. It's been a year, and it's normally they lay them right away. They don't normally wait a year and then lay charges. But this last raid, they would have got more evidence against me and others. I don't know, right? They could still charge me. They could still charge others. But so far, they haven't. And every day that goes by without them charging us is a day it's less likely to happen. But it's not. I'm not in the clear or anything like that. I'm not like laughing. I'm off the hook or anything like that. No, there's still significant risks involved. Clearly, we're still annoying some people that they came back the second time. And, you know, I think back in the day, in the 90s, when I first started being in this movement, it was about bong shops. Bongs and pipes were banned in Canada under federal law. Any instruments or paraphernalia for illicit drug use were prohibited with some fairly severe penalties. And when these laws were passed in the late 80s, they shut down hundreds and hundreds of head shops all across Canada. And in the mid-90s, new shops, this kind of a hemp store movement started going. And especially in Vancouver, they would often raid these bong shops and hemp stores. But the same thing, no charges would get pressed because they knew these laws were kind of weak. And the real punishment is them coming and taking all your stuff, you know, and you can lose a lot. And if they keep doing that, they start coming back every month or every week. Well, then it becomes very hard to stay in business. Once a year, that's pretty bad, but we can survive that if we have to. But, you know, and back in the day, they would, you know, in Vancouver, they raided, Mark Emery, who had kind of the first big bong shop in Vancouver. They raided him once, raided him just over a year later. And they started coming back every month and every few weeks and hitting him again and again until they drove him out of business for a while. And so I'm not sure that's going to happen this time with me, but we don't know, right? So we try to batten down the hatches, be ready for more police enforcement, have our lawyers on retainer, have product, stashed away or whatever. And try to see what happens. But they may come back again tomorrow, maybe next month, maybe next year, maybe never. I don't know. We just do our best to survive and carry on and do what we do.
How can people keep up to date with what's going on up there? Keep informed about all that's happening. What's your website? What's your social media?
So we've got mushroomdispensary.com is our business website, and we have some videos and links there. I'm online. I can't believe I got mushroomdispensary.com, by the way. Like, I thought someone would have taken that URL, but it was available, so we got it. I'm at danalarson.com. You can see about me there. My site's a little outdated, but there's still a lot there. My books are at potheadbooks.com, and I've got a website called Drug War Report with links and updates pretty much every day just on what's going on in the war on drugs around the world, and often the stories that are getting missed, but, we find them and paint a picture there.
That was my conversation with business owner, political activist, and drug policy revolutionary Dana Larson. His medicinal mushroom dispensary and microdose cafe was raided by Vancouver police on Thursday, October 17th. I'll be following this story closely, and I'll bring you updates as it develops. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century along with an archive of past shows at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying
for
so
the
long.
Drug Truth Network,
so
this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.